This is an extract from the allotment journals of the one Mr. Richie Devine. Mm-hmm. He couldn't make it tonight, so he sent me. It's about Richie got in trouble with the banks during the Celtic Tiger, and he's hiding out on an allotment. On an allotment. being indoor barbecue season again, the unusually cold spell seems to be slowing growth, particularly with my courgettes. Courgette is the French name for immature marrow, also known as zucchini in Italian. I'm glad I finally teased that out. Of the species Cucurbita pepo, it is the same family as pumpkin and squashes and prone to the cucumber mosaic virus. But resistant varieties can be bought, such as the Defender and the Supremo. They're a good source of folate, potassium, and the all-important fiber to keep you regular, and vitamin C. They take up considerable space and must be planted 90 centimetres apart each way. But two or three plants is all that is required to supply the average post-Celtic Tiger household. They also come in yellow, my favourite colour. I was discussing their slow start in an over-the-fence chat with Jim, my allotment neighbour, and if truth be told, and I'm not ashamed to admit it, myself and Jim have what would be known in e-dating terms as an affinity. But as with domestic arrangements, in allotments, good fences make good neighbours. Although ours is only two strands of wire that does the job, sets the all-important boundaries that child psychologists are forever banging on about. Jim's allotment is quite a success, and he has avoided the scourge of the pigeons by netting everything. Initially I scoffed at this, but maybe he's right. He has wonderful luscious red strawberries growing along our boundary. So well netted, no pest. Well, maybe except Homo sapiens sapiens could get at them. Besides being a fine gardener, Jim is also a whiz on music, a connoisseur of classic cartoons from the 50s, and anything that came out in a box set in the last 10 years. Jim has courgettes growing in his garden at home. He's a serious head. And since it is indoor Barbie time, he invited me round on Saturday to share victuals and look at his courgettes and meet his good wife Alanis and her friends. I was delighted with this invite. Besides the fact that the chief of staff and my daughter Lucy were in Spain, I really felt I had arrived, in allotment terms I mean. After all, that's what allotments are all about, isn't it? Community spirit, that sense of bonhomie, your house is my house type of thing. But before the barbie on Saturday afternoon, I had to replant space in my onion patch that had recently become available due to pigeons. I decided to replant with white spring onions, Lisbon's, snowball turnips and organic beetroot, D2. Don't laugh. It's a source of folate, fibre and manganese. How, you may ask, can I plant so late? Well, I say all the above can be planted as late as July. How, you may ask, am I so knowledgeable about such matters? Well, I say I just went into Tesco and looked at all the packets until I found ones I could plant at this time of year. Of course, I was in Tesco procuring the weekly rations. I don't think the surge in allotments will put them out of business anytime soon. If anything, there will be a spike in profits in the seed department, another €6. This brings the total cost of this allotment to approximately €350 plus diesel, and with no return to date. Well, except for some rocket lettuce leaves that the chief of staff brought home. How much is the head of lettuce in Tesco, I wonder? Of course, I was writing it off against the health benefits of being out in the fresh air, blah blah blah. Physical activity, blah blah blah. But I nearly had a coronary as a result of those pigeons. At least €350 worth. So better be playing sailing from now on or in the red. It's good money after bad. I might as well buy a bad racehorse or a yacht and a pair of those short blue Wellingtons with white soles that those sailory types wear. It's also important to note that after initial planting, the allotment requires a minimum of 2 to 3 hours per week to watch the weeds, which isn't a lot, and that wouldn't include watering if necessary. Watering can be a problem on our allotment, though. If there are others using it, the pressure drops and it can take forever, as was the case on Saturday when I was trying to get away to Jim's barbie, having worked up a sound appetite. The water was too acidic when I realised I had bought nothing to bring. The standard bottle of wine would have sent me on a 7-mile round trip, and it just wasn't worth it. I was contemplating this and goading the water from the tap with expletives when a cottage's eye fell upon Jim's strawberries. Fragaria fesca, or alpine strawberry, is one plant ideal for the Irish climate. Germination from seed can be tricky, but plants can be bought and planted in rows. Partial shade is good. Planting in spring in moist but not wet soil, it will bear a large, fragrant fruit all year round. All through the summer. So I thought Jim might notice if I took just a few. When I had finished watering, I pretended to weed on my side of the fence, beside the weak spot I had previously detected in Jim's netting. It wasn't hard to pick a dozen. Jim had membrane down to ensure that the fruit doesn't touch the soil. One could also use straw for this. It keeps them clean and dry. Those alpine strawberries really produce, and I must say, Jim had done a good job. I tried two and they were juicy, and as good as they looked. I knew Jim would be delighted to get good quality strawberries. But by the time I found Jim's house, I was beginning to have second thoughts. Let's face it, Jim's suspicions might be raised. Why would you give strawberries to somebody that you knew had loads of them? And he knew you knew he had loads of them. I hadn't been thinking so I decided to slip them to his wife in a brown paper bag. The all-important handover would be seen by the other guests, and the strawberries forgotten or eaten by morning. On arrival, I looked around for Jim, but couldn't see him anywhere, so I helped myself to the wine and tore into the small pizzas. I was thinking the food was a bit scant when I noticed a few adults looking at me as I tucked into my third and the last mini pizza. Just then, one of the kids rushed in and started screaming that I'd eaten all the pizzas and making a right hoo-ha, when a pearl-clad woman, whom I felt had returned one of my covetous glances earlier, approached. She looked at the plate and looked at me, and with a look that said, "You've just lost your sit beside a friend for a day voucher," told me that I had eaten the kiddies' food and that there were sausages and chicken on the barbie for the adults. She then introduced herself as an Annis. I explained myself and handed her the brown paper bag, which was becoming sodden from the juicy strawberries. She accepted them graciously and said, "James will love them." I said, "Tip, sprinkled with pepper. It really brings out the taste." And she looked at me as if I was one of the Gorgon sisters, so I said, "They'll go great with fresh organic double cream." And she told me I could find James in the barn and shed, where he had moved the barbecue in out of the rain and wind. I watched her dash the last few feet to the sink with her hand clutching the underside of the bag before making a quick exit to the shed. There I found an apron-clad Jim, tongs in hand, looking at the smoke coming out the shed door. We stood in the drizzle chatting, and between the incursions into the shed to prod sausages, he showed me around the garden. I refrained from letting him know that puncturing sausages was no longer best practice. "Ways of doing things change over time, Jim," I felt like saying. Just like the ducks changed their mind on whipping out tonsils. It was now no longer deemed appropriate to puncture sausages. Rather, let them cook in their own juices. The garden was, as I suspected, not a weed, straight rows and everything labelled. He also went in for the raised beds. Using 9-inch planks, he made frames and filled them with soil with nice gravel paths in between. The slugs hate gravel. I found two of them dead in my peas and threw them as far away as I could. If one wished, these could be raised up to waist height to reduce bending, but even as they were on the ground, it made it easier to defend against slugs. Well, needless to say, I went OTT complimenting his courgettes, and it paid off. And when the wind wanted balls over next day to polish off the leftovers, they looked no further than yours truly. Thank you.
Now this is a pantoum. It's called Coffee. Rest a while upon the clearing green of the Celtic sea. Surrender supine, sightless to the saline breath of moon. Half submerged in time, lull to wake the first of memory. Late summer winds dull above the pulse slow drum cocoon. Surrender supine, sightless to the saline tug of moon. The swell and fall, dream-heavy waters crash and filter in. Late summer winds are dulled above the pulsar drum cocoon. The matriarch of time is shifting sleep beneath her skin. The swell and fall of daydream water crashes, filters in. A long-lost, lonely salmon finds the currents of the lee. The matriarch of time, shifting sleep beneath her skin, draws each end to set beginnings free. A long-departed salmon finds the currents of the lee, rests a while beneath the clearing green of the Celtic Sea.
Yeah.
Sweet. You cannot expect to cast a shadow unless the sun is shining on you from behind. And finally, thank you, Patricia. And finally, Mr. Simon Deasy.
Called The Wall. With a lack of forgiveness for something that you've done that you feel on some level warrants forgiveness, perpetuate that unforgiven action and also consequently any suffering caused by the continuance of that action, I wonder, whilst wishing to be anything other than what I am. And then I remember our lips and limbs again, the limbs and lips of you and I locked delinquently once upon a time. Well, liberty was wrung out between us, and you and I hid, safe within it and our only ever beauty at that time. And I think now that we could have been forgiven for any and all defiance, for our heroism, if nothing else. I mean, we had no choice. We had to do something, right? We had to do something, right? Without any reason to believe that we would ever be free, anywhere other than each other's arms. And it all seemed so goddamned, always, everything we did or tried to do, but at a time when that was not only the most unimportant kind of damned, but when that wasn't even a real threat in comparison to its contemporaries. When that was more of a myth, a fairy tale, like a woman in black who wants to eat you, or the concept of anything ending. I remember the feeling of being blissfully thoughtless, completely indifferent, and knowingly uncertain as to whether I would survive traversing the icy 45 degree roof of your parents' house, belly up at 3 a.m, ingeniously wearing my shoes as gloves so as to not make a sound. I must have made it though, as I can still see our limbs that night, perfectly, how they were, felt, and looked. And I can remember the sound of that liberty ringing. And I can remember waking up the next morning by your side and being surprised by everything. God, it's so quiet tonight. It is almost as if nothing prevailed after all. There is a dog barking near the first birds of dawn, but half-heartedly, as if he knows that there are people who are not like me. I flick the cap off a warm beer by leveraging my lighter over my forefinger and then in under the cap. It tinkles on the floor a while and then rests, but my mind thinks about the sound of it, and then suggests that maybe I should get onto my bed and look to do the same. But I have taken up my thoughts again about infinite divisibility and what I may or may not do tomorrow. And then, again, without choice, I see young lovers and their bodies between sheets, beating off each other to the rhythm of finite breaths and what may come. And I remember the feeling of ice gripping a soul and yet melting. And even though I consider for the first time how many feet there were to fall, I remain still unafraid and then awake against the wall.